What's needed to prevent heart disease in children and adolescents today? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July the 15th. We'll talk with a guest expert, a UW-Madison professor and physician, who is on a national panel looking into that question. And we will wonder if the guidelines that were issued last week by the American Academy of Pediatrics, that children as young as 2 with certain risk factors be tested for high cholesterol, and that doctors should consider prescribing cholesterol-lowering statin drugs to children as young as 8, make any sense? And we will welcome your questions and reactions about the effort and the need to prevent heart disease in children so young. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Pat McBride, a professor of medicine and family medicine and co-director of the Preventive Cardiology Program at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you're on a different panel. You're not with the American Academy of Pediatrics and those recommendations, but a panel with the National Institutes of Health?
Yes, we're putting together guidelines on reducing cardiovascular risk in children and adolescents.
Yes, so do you suspect that your recommendations or guidelines will be similar to the pediatrics group or vastly different?
Well, we're not done yet, but we think they're going to be very similar.
Yeah. So do kids really as young as 2 years old need to be tested for cholesterol?
Well, there are children who have genetic cholesterol disorders that are obvious from the parents. And in order to make sure that parents understand the risk and start changing dietary issues and also affecting their lifestyle, they really have a long-term plan, it is important. There's people as young as 20, 24 years old that develop heart disease.
Yeah. And indeed, you're aware of young children who have cholesterol levels 400 or more?
Yes. You know, just last week, for example, I saw two children from a family whose father had a cholesterol over 400. He had a heart attack at age 24 and bypass surgery at age 26. And I saw a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old, and their cholesterols were almost 400, just like their father's.
How can that be? Is that just genetics?
It's genetic. They're missing a gene that helps clear cholesterol from the bloodstream.
Yeah. So if there is this family history, it makes sense, you think, to test a young child for the cholesterol level. When do you decide if a statin is called for a young child?
Well, there are about 10 long-term studies now of children on statins that have these genetic cholesterol disorders, and they've been proven to be very safe and effective. So we generally would start somewhere around the age of 8 to 10 to make sure that the cholesterol buildup doesn't start. It actually starts when they're very young, but there are small blockages when they're in the 2 to 8 year range. But they start becoming more complicated and more enlarged around 8 to 10.
A lot of the news coverage I've been seeing was saying there isn't any long-term data on young children taking these statins for a long time.
Well, that's true. They're about 5 years long is the longest. Statins, people need to understand, are one of the safest medications we have. In fact, 3 of them are naturally occurring. They're found in yeast, and they're actually safer than aspirin in the long term, but the longest studies in children are about 5 years.
And that's good enough, you think?
Absolutely, because they looked at these in detail. They looked at every parameter, growth and development, all the hormone development, brains, cognition, everything, and they really haven't found anything. You know, it'd be great to have studies that were 40 years long and showed that they prevented heart attacks and bypass surgery, but that's not economically or practically feasible. There's no way that in my lifetime, anyway, there's going to be a study like that. You can't do 20 and 30-year-long studies.
Yeah. We've been talking about kids that have a genetic disorder. What about kids who don't necessarily have a genetic disorder?
Well, you know, there was a lot of reaction to these guidelines, but if somebody really read them in detail and looked at the science, the primary point is to make sure that children have a healthy lifestyle. So most people's cholesterol would be normalized with healthy eating, regular physical activity, and trying to maintain an ideal body weight. So it'd be the very significant exception as a child. Again, these kids with genetic disorders would be the primary people that might be candidates for medicine. Most of it is lifestyle.
Yeah. Are kids, though, without genetic disorders exhibiting high cholesterol more so than in the past?
Unfortunately, yes. You know, we have about 18% of our children now are considered obese, and just 15 years ago, that would have only been 5%. So we see now children who have what we used to call adult diabetes, and it's now called type 2 diabetes because we see so many children with this disorder now. And 10 years after developing diabetes, someone is at very significant risk of developing heart disease. So unfortunately, we're seeing these kinds of risk factors develop in our children.
We are talking with a UW-Madison professor and physician about the guidelines, recommendations issued last week by the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommending that doctors start testing overweight children or those with a family history of heart disease for high cholesterol beginning as early as age 2, and consider prescribing statin drugs, cholesterol-lowering drugs, as early as age 8. We're welcoming your thoughts and questions over the safety of this, the necessity of this, and questions you might have about preventing heart disease in young children and adolescents. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, use 263-1890, or you can send an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July the 15th. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. How is Wall Street involved in the current home mortgage and credit crisis? After 5, Ben and his guest will take a look behind the scenes at the housing market. That's coming up after 5, At Issue with Ben Marins. We are talking about kids and cholesterol and the recommendations issued last week by the American Academy of Pediatrics on testing kids for high cholesterol when they're very young and possibly even prescribing statins to children as young as 8 to prevent heart disease in children. We're welcoming your thoughts and questions about these recommendations and about things that can be done to prevent heart disease in young children. Our guest is Pat McBride, a professor of medicine and family medicine, co-director of the Preventive Cardiology Program at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Our number is 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. I'm wondering, Dr. McBride, about the how much risk young people are in today for developing heart disease.
Well, there's a significant risk that in the long term they're going to develop heart disease because we're seeing these unprecedented levels of obesity and diabetes in children. So the state of our health, of our nation's children, is not very good right now in general.
Yeah, so why are we seeing unprecedented levels of diabetes and the like?
Well, it has to be lifestyle. So, you know, if even though some obesity is genetic, about 40%, when we see the kind of change that we've seen over the last two decades, this really has to be lifestyle-related in our country. So marked increase in the number of calories, the poor quality of some of our food, and the lack of physical activity in our kids.
Yeah. Our kids are eating too much fast food and junk food.
Too much processed food.
Yeah. Let's take some calls. Wanda in Madison. Hi, Wanda. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a question about testing in kids. Actually, I'm fortunate enough to have gotten into the UW Preventive Cardiology Unit for an assessment when I was 50, and I had to push to get some of these tests done, but I was wondering if they might be useful for younger people, even kids. When I come from a long line of people that have heart attacks at very early ages, in my opinion. My brother died at 45, and other people in my family have had heart conditions at pretty early ages. And when we do testing on our family members using the ordinary HDL and LDL, we're normal.
Mm-hmm.
But when we did the LDLS and some other specialized tests out of preventative cardiology, they were quite abnormal. And the carotid artery test showed a pretty high degree of blockage. They don't do this anymore, but they told me that I had the arteries of a healthy 120-year-old lady.
Oh, no.
But I was 50, so there's a healthy 120-year-old lady out there somewhere. So I'm wondering if some of those tests would be useful in kids. It would have been nice to, A, not have to push for the test as an adult, but B, it would have been nice to know before I was 50. I don't have any symptoms.
There's less evidence about some of these tests in children because, you know, we start with older people and the more at risk and work our way backwards. But two things. One is we do some of those specialized testing in the families that have high risk like yours, including children. And there isn't much value to looking at the blockages in the carotid arteries, the arteries in the neck in children except for research purposes because, you know, the average 10 to 20-year-old is not going to have a lot of buildup yet, but you can see it in a research study. So from a practice or clinical point of view, usually the risks, the cholesterol, the HDL, some of the special tests are enough for us.
Okay. So are you recommending that they start with the adults in the families or work their way down to the kids or just
Yeah, in general, that's what you'd like to do. You know, if there are the presence of risk in adults, then it's highly likely the kids in the family will have similar risks. In general, a lot of these are what we call dominance. About half the kids would be affected on average.
Yeah. You know, what about also, I bring up my husband all the time when I talk about heart disease because he was recently diagnosed with it, even though he's had a cholesterol level, I swear, a total cholesterol level of under 150. And so we've never considered this an issue for him ever. And but it's because of the, you know, LDL versus HDL and triglycerides. The triglycerides are a factor that I guess hadn't been looked at very closely in the past.
The most common cholesterol problem that leads to early heart disease is a high triglyceride and a low HDL or low good cholesterol. So this is part of the panel that we get. So sometimes people have low cholesterols because their good cholesterol is so low. So the total cholesterol can be misleading, and that's why we get the breakdown. We get the various types of cholesterol in the body.
Yeah, and he was put on a statin, and so far so good. But I also heard that there were side effects to statins, like beware of muscle pain.
That's right. About 3 to 5% of people will have muscle and joint pain, and it's completely reversible if it happens. People take it. About 1 in a million people just on a statin would have, you know, significant side effects enough to cause some, you know, problems with muscle or liver, but it's really rare. And most of the troubles are obvious with following up on blood tests and then again completely reversible if they're stopped.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, I reading up on this, I read that some cardiologists think that these statins are wonder drugs and ought to be put in our drinking water.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far because, of course, there's a lot of people that take good care of themselves or don't have the genes that lead to abnormal cholesterol. So really, it's the minority of people that would be candidates for these in the range of about 10 to 20% of people. You know, it's similar in a lot of ways to other risks like high blood pressure or high blood sugar. People don't hesitate to recognize the value of treating high blood pressure, but the risks from cholesterol are actually very similar or even greater with some of the cholesterol disorders.
Yeah. Thanks to Wanda. Orville in Madison is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Orville.
Hi, Orville.
Hi, Dr. McBride. Dr. McBride is my doctor.
Oh.
Thank you for coming on.
You bet.
I have a couple of questions for you. Well, could you spend a little time breaking down the differences in ethnic susceptibility to high cholesterol because of differences in genes in Afro-Americans and whites and Latin Americans? Also, could you say a little bit about red yeast rice? Some people in the health food stores pushing red yeast rice for treating cholesterol. Is there any efficacy in this? I'll get my answer off there.
Great. Thank you, Orville. Yeah, those are two excellent questions. There definitely are differences. So any child or adult from any group that's from a lower socioeconomic status, no matter what the race is, are at greater risk. We also know that people of color, African American, Native American, Mexican American, people from Asia and Pakistan, for example, have certain types of cholesterol that are greater risk. But the good news is some of the ethnic groups have higher HDL cholesterols and lower triglycerides. So there's some things that are at greater risk, such as LDL, and there are some that are lower risk. Unfortunately, what the most significant risk is for some of the ethnic groups that I mentioned is a much greater risk of diabetes and obesity. And so we're seeing extraordinary percentages of children of color in this country becoming overweight, obese, and developing high blood sugar and high cholesterol.
Red yeast?
Yeah, red rice yeast is interesting. It's the source of the original statins that were discovered were found in red rice yeast from China. In fact, the Chinese used this for over about 2,000 years for circulation. But most red rice yeast now sold in the United States doesn't contain any statins, and so there's a minimal effect. There is some good research that red rice yeast in its natural form that contains statins actually does lower cholesterol by about 20%.
Mm-hmm. And there are there any other, remedies besides prescribed statins that that could lower cholesterol in kids or adults?
But definitely. In fact, this report from the American Academy of Pediatrics and similar reports, by the way, from the American Heart Association and the American Diabetes Association support this guideline. But there are a number of natural ways to lower cholesterol. For example, there are things called plant sterols and stanols. They're found in a number of margarines and other food products, things like Take Control and Benecol.
Mm-hmm.
They lower cholesterol about 10 to 12%. Regular intake of healthy nuts, such like almonds and walnuts, will lower LDL cholesterol by about 5%. There are some fibers that lower cholesterol. That's where you get these advertisements for the oat products and things like that. Switching from higher saturated fat to healthy fats, such as mono fats and trans fats, olive oil, canola oil, that can lower cholesterol quite significantly. Just losing weight, of course, is really valuable. There are a whole variety mm-hmm. of natural treatments. Omega-3 fatty acids, like in fish oil, will lower triglycerides quite significantly. So people sitting down with their healthcare provider can actually develop a very healthy eating plan with some natural supplements and have a very significant effect on cholesterol without using medicine.
Yeah, so Mom had it right when she made us eat the oatmeal.
You got it.
Yeah. Too bad I didn't like it. Our guest is Dr. Pat McBride, Professor of Medicine and Family Medicine, I do now, co-director of the Preventive Cardiology Program at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, talking with us about preventing heart disease in children. Talking with us about the recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics to consider prescribing statins to children as early as age 8. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We're talking this hour about kids and cholesterol with a professor of medicine and co-director of the Preventive Cardiology Program at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, Pat McBride, talking with us about the recommendations issued last week by the American Academy of Pediatrics that doctors should start testing overweight children or those with a family history of heart disease for high cholesterol starting at age 2 and consider prescribing statins as early as age 8. We're talking about the safety of this, the necessity of this, and what else needs to be done to prevent heart disease in our children or our grandchildren. We welcome your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Margie in Franklin is with us next. Hi, Margie. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm very excited to hear this discussion. I am a dietitian. However, I specialize in senior care, not children, but I have 4 children and 3 grandchildren. So I'm always interested in new things I'm hearing. Are you familiar with the exercise program that has happened in, I believe it started in Naperville, Illinois, and it has been spread to Kansas City and Charleston and some other cities in the country where the exercise program during this in the school day has been increased and modified?
Yes.
And they're seeing dramatic results.
Yeah, what kind of dramatic results, Margie?
The exercise program used to be one time a week for 50 minutes where they would have phys ed, and they slowly increased to 45-minute sessions 5 days a week. And within 1 year, weights decreased, and what they were surprised to see was that the days of suspension decreased dramatically in the first year. In 1906, one school went from 71 suspensions to 24 suspensions the very next year. And I'm sorry, that was happened in the first 4 months of the exercise program.
I'm sorry, so the exercise helped behavior, but what about
yes.
cholesterol and such?
They were not doing blood tests along with it, but when you looked at the body weight, within 2 years of being in the program, there was not one obese child in the entire school.
Yeah, well, are you aware of that, Dr. McBride?
Yes, that's become a national model. You know, schools are starting to come around to a number of things that are really important. You know, they have been sort of generally drumming physical activity out of the school curriculum, and it's also an area where health is taught. So a number of school districts are reversing that and following the lead of Naperville. And another major initiative is to put healthy food in school. So oftentimes school lunches, and there are a lot of snack machines and soda machines, and many school districts are working on their school lunch program and they're getting rid of soda in schools and things like that. So these are really important initiatives to reverse national trends that really contributed to the obesity epidemic.
Yeah. Why is weight or obesity linked to high cholesterol?
Well, when people develop extra fat in the body, particularly in the middle of the body, the center abdomen, people can develop different types of cholesterol disorders. And so the fat cells themselves produce chemicals that tell the body to store food or to use less. So it's an adaptive response from centuries of difficulty getting food. And in this past 100 years, it's been much easier to get food, and so we tend to accumulate it when we eat too much, and then that leads to higher fats in the bloodstream.
And losing weight almost universally will lower cholesterol.
Well, for many people, for most people, that's true. For people with genetic cholesterol disorders, they can be marathon runners and lean and eating extremely healthy diets, but because of the genetics, will still have abnormal cholesterol levels. So for most people, you can reverse these cholesterol levels to normal, but for many people they can't, and they do need the help of supplements or medication.
Yeah. Do you have any estimate, Dr. McBride, as to how many kids, say, eight-year-olds actually are suffering from high cholesterol today?
Well, the most common genetic cholesterol disorder, it's called familial hypercholesterolemia. It's a gene that's 1 in 500 children. The other types of cholesterol disorders affect about 3 to 5% of children, enough to warrant concern to see healthcare providers and even consider prescription of medication. We're talking about less than 1% of kids that would likely be candidates for medication.
Mm-hmm. Bill in Sun Prairie is with us. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Good morning. I want to have a comment and a question. First, the comment. I would be real careful about side effects of statins. I know a number of people who went on them and had to go off of them because the side effects were so bad. They include potential increase in liver enzymes, so patients have to be monitored, muscle aches, weakness, immune system suppression, and an increase in cancer risk, serious degenerative muscle disease. You know, I think this is downplayed, and it should be talked about.
We talk about
let me respond to that, Bill. So the muscle aches and the liver enzyme are true, and they're about 1 to 3% of people on them. Immune function and cancer are not true. Those have been studied extensively, and actually there's reduced risk associated with being on statins. So I have to disagree with you there on the immune function and cancer. Those have not been demonstrated at all.
which leads me to my question. Who funded these tests?
These studies?
Yes.
Generally NIH. So it depends. There's, you know, hundreds of studies on cholesterol in children. The statin studies, the eight long-term studies on statins in children, a few were sponsored by industry, but most were sponsored by NIH, National Institute of Health.
Isn't it true that NIH isn't funded in part by the drug companies?
No, it's funded completely by the government. There's no funding at NIH for by industry.
Yeah. So, Bill, you're apparently concerned that statin drug companies are funding the research. But I mean, what do you think? So you don't think that that this is a concern for children?
Well, I think it's a great concern for children. But what is unfair, I think, is that the drug companies don't point out that exercise and a very good natural health approach can do as much or more than taking statins, and they don't run these comparisons in their tests.
Many studies do, so you're absolutely right. For most kids, that's all that would be needed is a change in lifestyle, and that's really clear in any of the documents that have been put out by these national organizations. So if people go to the American Academy of Pediatrics website, right on the front page is the link to this guideline, and it talks extensively about the importance of lifestyle as the first and primary treatment for these types of disorders.
But media types like us zero in on when we hear 8-year-olds consider putting them on statins. That's the headline. You know, that's the grabber, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. That's my reaction is that people go to something and kind of really exaggerate rather than really reading the science and looking at the guideline in detail. It's really a thoughtful guideline. It's consistent again with a guideline that came out last year from the American Heart Association. American Diabetes Association last year came out with a similar guideline for children, and I think our NIH guideline is going to look a lot like it. Mm. These are consistent patterns from a variety of scientists, and the evidence is there. Now, the key is related to Bill's question. We're talking about kids with very extreme levels from genetics that are the only candidates for medications in young childhood or in adolescence. So we're talking about kids that could not reverse their cholesterol disorders with lifestyle alone.
Yeah, and what about kids and or their parents that, try to but struggle and remain, overweight and high cholesterol levels?
Yeah, that's, a clear concern for a lifetime. So if a child is overweight or obese as a child, they have about a 75% chance of remaining that as an adult. And so we're constantly looking for newer ways and newer treatments to try to help people reduce weight and maintain that weight loss. So the most important thing is to, for children especially, is get away from TV and computer screens and get physically active.
We're talking with Dr. Pat McBride. He is with the Preventive Cardiology Program at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He is also on a National Institute of Health panel for coming up with recommendations to prevent heart disease in children and adolescents. He's talking with us about the recommendations issued last week by the American Academy of Pediatrics in preventing heart disease in children. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about this. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, beer is making a splash in the headlines these days with a big merger announced between Budweiser or Anheuser-Busch and a Belgian beer company. We'll talk about merger mania in the beer industry coming up after 7 o'clock. We're talking about kids and cholesterol and new recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics that children as young as age 2 start being screened for high cholesterol and children as young as 8 possibly being prescribed cholesterol-lowering statin drugs. We're talking with a guest physician and a professor of medicine and family medicine at the UW-Madison Medical School, and we're welcoming your reactions and your questions about preventing heart disease in children. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Jackie in Drummond is with us next. Hi, Jackie, you're on the air.
Yes, see, I was just wondering, you know, over the years we've all perceived this issue, and I'm wondering why the pediatricians and the medical profession haven't interceded in more of a an emergency way with people. When you start bringing your one-year-old and you see, you know, that they're, you know, overweight with their charts, isn't it the responsibility of the medical profession to be more aggressive with these parents? And also in some schools, they wanted to do body index measuring, and parents get all upset. But maybe it's to the point where people need to, I don't mean shamed into it, but kind of a fear. You know, when you go around to fairs and things and see all these fat children, it just breaks your heart. Because you know they're going to be fat adults. And I just think the medical profession is at fault for this, for not early intervention. And then one more thing, if this hits, you know, poverty and high cholesterol along with not affordable health care, that's another big issue.
Yeah.
Well, your points are very well taken. The problem is that we don't have clear ways that are highly effective to help people lose weight. We know what people need to do, but the families need to be the ones that are the ones instituting this, you know. So actually, pediatricians and other healthcare providers that have seen children have been concerned about this for the last two decades. But so far, we've not found, you know, ways to stem the cultural tide of more and more computer screens and movie screens and DVDs and the kinds of food that are that people can, you know, rapidly consume. So there's not an easy answer to the problem, and I think healthcare providers have been alerting parents and communities about this for a long time, but we have to reach the solutions together as communities, not single, you know, providers, for example.
Yeah. Did I read recently that while it's still a big problem, so to speak, that the obesity rate in children ticked down slightly in the past year, that maybe we're starting to get a handle on it?
Well, rather than rising, it flattened out. So the rates are about the same in the 17 to 18% range. But it looks like people are becoming more aware as a country. Wisconsin ranks about 20th in the country, so there are a number of different initiatives in the state.
Yeah. So, well, Jackie mentioned that she thought that doctors should get be more aggressive about it. I mean, typically right now, how aggressive are doctors? If I brought my overweight child to your office, would you, you know, yell at me?
Well, we found that yelling and fear aren't motivators for most people. In fact, they're kind of counterproductive in most of the science. So they're really more strategies about trying to motivate people to pay attention. You know, pediatricians and family physicians are very careful with children in height and weight charts and monitoring, that kind of thing. So it becomes obvious with any visit to a physician or nurse practitioner with children. So, you know, at that point they intervene and they discuss and they try to provide a guidance about appropriate calories and the importance of exercise and that sort of thing. But there are so many trends in the country that buck this, that it's really difficult, and it's really the burden, I think, is on the whole community.
Yeah, and she mentioned schools. I've read about those around the nation that were thinking of sending something home in a report card about, hey, your kid's overweight, or here's their body mass index, and you need to watch it. Do you think that that's a positive thing to do?
Well, I think so. I mean, Arkansas has done this in a major way. The governor started a program where kids get their height, weight, and body mass index, and then it's sent home as a card. There was a small minority of people upset about this, but most people, you know, saw it as a favorable piece of information. And so that experiment is really going on, whether or not that makes a difference or not.
Yeah. What about What other things could happen in the community? I'm thinking there were efforts to try to public policy makers thinking of doing things to tell, I don't know, fast food places to put nutritional information so it's readily available, and other restrictions to try to make fast food not as attractive to kids.
Yeah, you know, this problem is just as significant in adults. We obviously see the same trend in adults. So I think families need to make a commitment to exercising, being active together, trying to improve the quality of food that they bring into the house. People are worried that high-quality food's more expensive, but, you know, it really isn't. We're not talking about expensive things. We're talking about locally grown things. So I think portion size is really important, the type of foods that we consume. We have to make neighborhoods safer for kids to get physical activity. We need to limit TV watching and computer time. So there's a number of steps that are actually outlined quite well on the American Academy of Pediatrics site about what both physicians and families can do to help stem this tide.
Yeah. So what is, Dr. McBride, the, I don't know, the likelihood that a kid who has high cholesterol, you know, as a kid or an adolescent, is going to have heart disease later on?
Well, about 75% of kids that have cholesterol levels above in the top 10%. So if you're a child and you're in the top 10% of cholesterol levels for your age group, there's about a 75% chance you'll have those same levels as you get to be an adult. And those are the kids that are at most risk for developing future heart disease.
Yeah. And how come I sometimes see on the ads for various, I think they're the cholesterol-lowering statin drug TV ads, that they'll say that there is no link between this actually preventing a heart attack? What's the point if there's no, is that true? I mean, taking a statin doesn't lower your risk of having a heart attack?
Oh, no, actually, they reduce the risk by 30 to 40%.
All right,
that's
then maybe I misunderstood that. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's taking these over a significant period of time and, you know, doing the other things that help them work. So a person has to, you know, have a healthy lifestyle to make them most effective. But they reduce the risk of heart attack and stroke by in the range of 20 to 40%.
Yeah, and they really do lower your cholesterol a great deal. I always heard that, you know, you want your cholesterol, total cholesterol, under 200. And now, from personal experience, my husband's is like 70. I mean, it's below 100.
Yeah, they reduce cholesterol up to as much as 50 to 60%. And, of course, there's a number of other things. As we mentioned, there's a number of natural things that can be effective as well. And combinations of those can achieve cholesterol reductions up to a third. So there are a lot of ways to deal with this problem, and we're learning more and more every year.
Yeah. Well, in conclusion, then, anything more on these recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics that we should think about or that we haven't talked about?
Well, I think we need a complex plan. We need, you know, communities to get involved. We need schools, families to all come together so that we don't have to think about medications for kids. Now, the most important thing to remember is these are really for kids that develop the fairly unusual or rare genetic cholesterol problems that lead to very premature coronary disease. You know, parents that develop heart disease in their 20s to 40s, and those are the kids that are candidates for these cholesterol disorders and need to be carefully screened.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you, Joy.
Pat McBride is a professor of medicine and family medicine and co-director of the Preventive Cardiology Program at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also serving on a panel for the National Institute of Health that is seeking to reduce or prevent heart disease in children and adolescents, and that NIH panel will be issuing recommendations fairly soon, which are likely to be similar to the American Academy of Pediatrics, which released its guidelines last week, saying children as young as 2 should be tested for cholesterol levels, especially if the child is overweight or has a family history, and children as young as 8, especially those children with some sort of genetic disorder when it comes to cholesterol, should be given statin drugs. So children as young as 8 should be medicated for high cholesterol. We thank him for his time and his information on preventing heart disease in children. We thank you for your calls. We also thank Karen Prager for producing the hour and Cynthia Schuster for her direction. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store 1-800-747-7444. You can also listen to our talk shows archived on our website, WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.